It's Sunday morning. Time for the Great Outdoors with Charlie Potter. Brought to you by the all-new Chevy Silverado and ChevyDriveChicago.com on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Good morning and happy Labor Day weekend. This is Charlie Potter here on WGN Radio, the outdoor voice of Chicago and America. Thank you for joining me on this Sunday morning. I'm going to start off with the most current news for those of you who look at September 1st as the beginning of the real new year. That's the beginning of hunting seasons across a lot of America. And for those of you who some may say, no, that's not correct in what I'm going to say, but September 1st in Illinois, ordinarily a day we herald wonderful dove hunting and time to be with family and get outdoors, was a bust. And it wasn't a bust because it rained, as it has done in some years past on the opening day. It was a bust because there were virtually no doves. So the question flying around the internet and the phone lines is, why? Why is a species that is so prolific and so abundant suddenly so scarce in many areas of the state? Now, some of you may be listening in Wisconsin or in Iowa or Indiana and say, well, we had wonderful dove hunting. But by and large, the reports are not good, and particularly from northeastern Illinois, which ironically is a area where there is wonderful dove hunting, even though it's highly urbanized. It was terrible. And the general consensus is that the series of storms that we had come through in August that dumped a prodigious amount of rain and also a lot of wind simply moved the birds out. Doves do not like a lot of rain. And the other sort of assumption is, this is not science, this is armchair biology by hunters, is that all the wind that we had this summer and the big storms probably made for a terrible nesting season. Doves are notorious for building, well, they don't build nests, they just sort of decide they want to drop an egg in the cradle of a tree or in a bush or something. I mean, they make a pathetic effort at making a nest. They're not good gardeners. They're not good homemakers. And as a result, when you have big winds or lots of rain, their nests just get blown to the ground. And the eggs, of course, obliterated. And there's a thought that that happened on a pretty widespread basis. So the result is September 1st in Illinois did not open with a bang in most parts of the state. It opened with a lot of people sitting in hot, very hot fields. It was over 90 degrees, looking at meadowlarks or blackbirds or everything else coming to the planted doves fields, but not looking at many doves. This is also the continuation of what now is by and large a multi-year trend across northern Illinois. It doesn't mean we haven't had some great dove hunting in recent years, but overall, over the past half dozen to 10 years, it does appear that the number of doves being harvested in northeastern Illinois, and in fact in Illinois in general, is on the decline. And this is true of state areas and private areas, so you can't say it's because of management, because over a number of years the trend is downwards. Is that something to be alarmed about? Of course it is. But is it something that we at this point in time have any ability to address? No, it's not, because the harvest from dove hunting has absolutely nothing to do with how many doves are going to be. It is so insignificant, but it does indicate that there are other things at work, and maybe it's part of the overall decline in birds. We know we're having a catastrophic decline in bird populations, and perhaps what we're seeing is part of that, that doves are being impacted. We know a few years ago when West Nile virus got into the population that doves were hurt. We don't think there's a lot of West Nile around right now in doves. There certainly has been some bird flu. We don't think that's an issue. So something is going on, though, where doves are not doing as well as they historically have this year. Once again, evidence of that. There still is the possibility of birds coming out of Minnesota, the Dakotas, Manitoba, Wisconsin, coming into Illinois in the coming weeks and moving through. So that may change some, but the local production was lousy. Speaking of production, something I talk about every year, that is the 2026 Waterfowl Survey issued by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. This used to be a big deal, a very big deal. Now they issue it almost in secrecy. And it used to be mandated by Congress that this be that the information be released by the first Friday in August. And there was a public hearing in Washington, D.C. the following week, at which the director of the Fish and Wildlife Service presided, the head of the Migratory Bird Division presided, and they issued their information on the upcoming fall, and seasons were set. No duck seasons were actually set before the end of August, because they had to have the breeding ground survey to do so. A number of years ago, the Fish and Wildlife, Department of Interior, and frankly, the economic interests in waterfowl said, we can't do this anymore. The uncertainty of knowing when seasons are going to be held is compromising a lot of business. People can't book their trips. They don't know what the regulations are going to be. So the Fish and Wildlife Service and the Department of Interior decided they would get rid of the annual adjustment and that they would set it for multi-years, and that every few years they would revisit, and if there was a change needed, it would not be for that year, maybe not even for the year after, but somewhere down the road. That was their way of saying, we're not going to manage seasons against waterfowl breeding populations. We are rather going to manage them over a long-term period, and we are not going to change them annually, as that impacts the ability of the commercial interests in waterfowl, whether it be hunting lodges, outfitters, guides, or hunting clubs, or even the states to conduct public drawings, and et cetera, to get information out. So we're just going to leave them as they are. That's the long story. The short story is populations continue to fall, and it should be alarming. And if this was back in 1988, and I say back in 1988 because I was involved sitting at the Department of Interior on that August meeting in 1988, when populations were actually not much lower than they are today, and there was a general call for a closure, a cessation of the duck hunting season due to the population numbers. And there was a distinct call for the closure of the pintail season across the country because of low population numbers. That effort was led by the Delta Waterfowl Foundation back in 1988. Because of the alarming decline in pintail. Pintail had fallen from a breeding pair population of over 10 million to a breeding pair population of hovering around 2 million. That was 1988. Here we are, nearly 40 wonderful years later, and numbers are virtually where they were in 1988, and nobody is calling for a closure of the duck season. In fact, the Fish and Wildlife Service has increased the limit on pintail from one pintail a day to three, determining that the harvest of pintail is not at all correlated to the breeding grounds numbers, that the breeding grounds population is being impacted through all kinds of things, from drought to agricultural production changes to predators, and that hunters don't make a difference. Well, here we are 40 years later, and the psychology, interestingly, has flipped 180 degrees in the other direction. The general feeling is hunting doesn't matter. We have to keep the same number of hunters we have or increase them, because continuing decline in hunter numbers for waterfowl will lead to a loss in revenue to manage habitat, a loss in interest in managing habitat, et cetera, and they believe it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. The shorter the seasons, the less people will hunt. The less people hunt, the less they'll contribute. The less they contribute, the less habitat we'll have. And that is the current mantra. Very different from that of 40 years ago, when the mantra really centered on, we have to reduce seasons because populations are in trouble. That's the current state of affairs at the Fish and Wildlife Service, and it's supported by industry and largely supported by conservation groups. The question really begs is, and the important one, is it supported by science? After all, waterfowl populations are supposed to be managed on a scientific basis for the best and the long-term good of the resource. Is science at play here, or is it strictly about economics and politics? It's a rhetorical question. The answer seems to be pretty obvious right now. There's not much discussion about science, and when we have population levels as they are, mallard populations are at a 30-year low, pintail are at a near all-time low, scaup populations have fallen by 70%, yet seasons, by and large, remain the most liberal they have in almost all of our lifetimes. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN. First, a message from our longtime sponsors, the Northwest Indiana and Chicagoland Chevrolet dealers, with much more on the Great Outdoors.
Hiking, camping, and hunting, it's all an adventure in the great outdoors, but nature can be tough. You need to be ready for anything and everything. Chevy Silverado is built to handle the toughest conditions and get you everywhere you want to go, worry-free. Silverado's designed to handle the big jobs. It's built for the great outdoors. With over 13,000 pounds of towing capacity and trailering sway control, Silverado can haul the biggest loads on the roughest roads and keep you cool as a Sunday drive. With 8 available cameras and up to 14 different views, it can spot trouble before it gets to you. That's peace of mind. And when you're ready for the backcountry, Chevy Silverado 1500 ZR2 owns the off-road. You name it, we run over it. No wonder it's Motor Trend's 2023 four-wheeler pickup truck of the year. So see your Chicagoland and Northwest Indiana Chevy dealer or go to ChevyDriveChicago.com and check out a Chevy Silverado. It's freedom to explore the great outdoors.
It's Charlie Potter and the Great Outdoors on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the Great Outdoors Show. Charlie Potter, your host here on WGN Radio. Just to pick up where I left off for a moment, and there'll be more on it this fall. The feeling among managers and the industry and hunters, by and large, is that hunting is not impacting the duck population. That factors such as drought, number one, habitat loss, number two, predators, number three, are what are truly diminishing duck numbers, and we, as we enter a year again with really very poor breeding ground results. Mallard populations, as I mentioned before the break, are down, well, they're down to the 30-year low. We haven't had fewer breeding mallards on the prairies in more than 30 years. Pintail are at just above their all-time low. And when you look at the science, you wonder, is there science sometimes? Because the population of canvasbacks is supposed to be up, and it's up 32% over its long-term average this year. How is that possible when the population of everything else is down? And how is it possible when we know that the same things that affect the production of all other waterfowl species affect canvasback? They need water. They need abundant small wetlands in which to nest and raise their broods. They need habitat. They need protection from predators. So it makes you just wonder how accurate the surveys are with canvasbacks being reported at one of their highest levels, in fact, in many, many years. So the analogy I'm going to use right now before I move on is, if you're a big game hunter and you've hunted elk and deer and antelope all your life, and that's what you pursue, and the population of elk, deer, and antelope declines significantly, and you're told by your state fish and game agencies, you're still a big game hunter, you're still a mammalian hunter, why don't you go shoot raccoons, possums, and skunks? Why don't you go hunt them? Because they're abundant, and after all, two of the three of those are considered, I guess, edible game animals. So maybe it's not raccoons, maybe it's not skunks, it's something else. But in other words, don't go hunt deer, elk, and antelope because their numbers are down. Go hunt much smaller mammals. Go hunt raccoons and badger and maybe a skunk or a possum or rabbits. Well, the same is going on with duck hunting. We have an entire culture, an entire waterfowling world that grew up around shooting mallards, pintail, and scaup or bluebills. That's the big three. But now their numbers are really in terrible shape. So we're being told, well, there are plenty of shovelers to shoot. Oh, and there are lots and lots of ruddy ducks to shoot. And maybe you can shoot something else, a gadwall, but the big three are going to be hard to find. That's really the equivalent of, if you're in the big game hunting world, you're being told find smaller mammals to hunt because their populations are in trouble, as they are in many parts of the West. And in the duck hunting world, you're being told mallards and pintail and bluebills, which have driven the culture of hunting for, well, since its beginning in America, are in trouble. So go find yourself a ruddy duck, or go find yourself some gadwall or a shoveler. It doesn't all add up. There'll be a lot more on it. This is not a show about duck hunting in any means, but it is a show about trust. And can we trust the information coming out of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to be accurate and to be in the best interest of the resource? Certainly, we have technology today that can be used that was never in play before. The surveys are conducted very similar to the way they have been ever since they were started in 1955. Maybe it's time we used a lot different technology to really figure out what's happening, both on the breeding grounds and, in fact, if at all, which I don't think it is, the harvesting of birds is having a negative impact on the population. But at some point in time, populations do reach a level at which, whether the harvest has had an impact or not, one has to say, can we take that chance? Moving on from that for a second, and the time I have left, just in a couple minutes, I do want to talk about the roadless rule, which I mentioned last week, and I'm going to get into it much more next week. The Trump administration has repealed the roadless rule, which went into effect during the Clinton administration. And as friends of mine in the industry say, the roadless rule is one of the great, great names and great misnomers in conservation. The Clinton administration, when it was in power 30-plus years ago, closed so many of our public roads and national forests to vehicular traffic. But the road still existed, so it was not roadless. It was not the creation of new roads. It was the cessation of being able to utilize many roads and a ban on creating new roads in many areas of our national forests and other public lands. What's at play here is a rescinding of that to say we need to maintain the roads that were in place because we have to be able to address these cataclysmic fires that are taking place, these horrendous fires. So many of this area that's burning is inaccessible, and it's inaccessible because the roads haven't been maintained to be able to get there. So it's a little bit of marketing. The roadless rule is being rescinded. It's very controversial, but maybe it shouldn't be, and I'll get into that next week. I hope you have a great Labor Day, wherever you might be, and when it comes also to this time of the year, as many of you anglers know, it's the best time to be on the water. Thanks for listening. This is Charlie Potter on the Outdoor Voice of Chicago and America, 720 WGN.